This morning, Jeff.
I'm great, guys. How are you?
Good. Really appreciate you coming on. And I know you can't get into the small details of a contract negotiation, but let me just frame it this way for you. When you have a deadline for an arbitration hearing like you had with Connor Brown and you're negotiating with Pierre Dorion, how much did the pressure of, hey, we got to have a deal by Thursday morning at 9 o'clock or this is going to a hearing, how much does that, I guess, help or hurt the negotiation process?
Well, I think just by the number of settlements that you see, it's obviously having a deadline of any sort creates urgency for both parties to try to get something done. Because really, at the end of the day, if you go into that hearing and you allow the arbitrator to make that decision, you're putting it in the hands of a third party who really doesn't know the relationship, doesn't really know the importance of, you know, what the player means to the team or, you know, how any of that sort of thing. So I think that, you know, when you get down to it, having that deadline is critical, and that's why you see these things settle all the time.
Jax, in the case of Connor Brown, real nice year here. How much did the landscape feel the negotiations change what you might have looked like before COVID and in the world we're in economically right now?
Yeah, for sure. That's a big factor. I think that, you know, hockey is just like every other business around the globe. Everybody's suffering because of the pandemic. So, you know, the landscape has changed, and that's evidenced by how many free agents are still sitting on the sidelines, not signed. And when you have a player like Connor, who is 1 year away from being an unrestricted free agent in a typical year with a cap that's increasing and the normal, you know, normal business happening, I think we probably had a more leverage, for lack of a better word. We've been in a position to negotiate almost like a free agent because, you know, no team wants to lose a 26-year-old or a 27-year-old who's in the prime of their career for nothing. So, you know, teams are motivated to either, you know, do a longer-term deal with some term and some bigger dollars. And in this case, you know, you haven't seen a whole lot of that this year. It's more short-term deals, people trying to feel out what our business is going to look like over the next 2 or 3 years. And, you know, maybe beyond that, it gets back to some normalcy. But, you know, that's what we're all hoping and praying for.
Also, Jack, strangely, the timing of this in a normal year, you go to arbitration, get a decent award, you walk out. We saw that with Mark Stone, although he was traded. Is the ability to take a lower salary in a year that we might have 48 games, could have escrow at 20%, the financial hit in a year like this on a down salary and then a couple of years at $4 million actually help you versus getting a decent arbitration award?
Yeah, all of that factors into it, Simmer. I think when you look at those factors and pushing the money out, you know, into years 2 and 3 in Connor's deal, it definitely becomes a factor, and that's why you're seeing deals structured that way. Most of these deals that I've been seeing are 2 and 3 year deals, and they're trying to kind of stuff the money a little bit at the end versus what has been happening the last 6 to 8 years, where you're putting the money at the front on these deals and getting signing bonus and those types of things. So right now, people are trying to avoid the escrow at 20% next year, and also from the team perspective, I think it's a cash flow thing. Owners all across the league have other businesses that are also suffering, not just their hockey teams. So whenever you can, you know, help them on a cash basis, it helps them. So it's a mutual benefit.
We're with NHL player agent Jeff Jackson, who has Connor McDavid, Connor Brown, amongst the many clients. Jeff, how much are your clients calling you just with a level of concern about where the hockey business is at? How much more are you having to talk to some of your players, if you are at all?
There's periodic conversations about the business, but it's more these guys are so used to being in full flight at this point in October in the middle of a season that they don't know what to do with themselves. And they've been working out since last April. You know, if you think about it, when the pandemic struck and the league shut down, it was close to the end of the season. So, you know, their normal you know, schedule was still intact. They, of course, you know, worked out and got prepared to come back for those teams that were back in the bubble to play in the playoffs. But for the other guys, and that would be, a Connor Brown, for instance, he hasn't played a game since March, and it's the end of October. So those players are all finding it difficult. They've worked out, they've skated, they've played golf, they've done everything they can think of, yoga, Pilates, everything, and now we're, almost November, and we don't know when they're going to play again. And I think that's the bigger thing. It's not the business side of it so much as getting these guys talking about it in the mental framework, because they're not used to it.
And you end up having a couple of teenagers being high picks, of course, Byfield and Drysdale. This has got to be even tougher for kids like that, where excitement of draft, go to training camp, either make the team or head back to junior, lots of unknowns for them as well.
Yeah, I've said it before. I think, all the kids this year in the draft, they all got ripped off of the draft experience, and now they're all dealing with a different reality. I think for the top kids like Quinton and like Jamie Drysdale, I mean, the silver lining is that they may have, the World Junior opportunity if that goes through like as it's, currently being planned. So they're looking forward to that. And then following that, the timing should be such that they would then, join their NHL team for training camp, depending on the timing, of course. So right now, I think their focus is getting ready mentally for World Junior and a fairly long bubble by the sounds of it, if they can pull this off. It sounds like they may be able to. So yeah. In the short term, that's their focus.
Yeah, sounds like, there's a report yesterday that the World Junior camp for the players that aren't playing like they are in the queue could begin as early as the middle of November. So we're looking at, almost 7 to 8 weeks that the guys that make the team and eventually play in the tournament could be in there. Jeff, you talked of, speaking of a bubble, you would have many clients, including Connor McDavid, that were in the bubble for varying lengths of time. In your conversations with those players, what was the general feedback of what life was like in the bubble and about whether they are open to the idea of doing something similar again?
Well, you mentioned Connor McDavid. I mean, he would have loved to have stayed in the bubble a lot longer. So he was not happy about that. But yeah, I think hockey players and pro athletes in general are very resilient. They live with a lot of uncertainty, through their whole lives. And many players, it's an uncertain reality every day whether they're going to have a job the next week. Kind of contrary to what the public sees. And so they're a resilient bunch. I think that I didn't hear, any complaints from players. Yes, it was, long and drawn out for some. But for the most part, the guys, they were just happy to be back playing. And they dealt with it the best way they could. And, we didn't have anybody really whining or complaining about it. And I think that, whatever they have to do to play again, I think the players will, find a way to do it. And maybe it's some sort of hybrid solution to what they had for the playoffs. I'm not sure if that's doable over the long term for a season. But if there's a way to do it in a hybrid manner, they may be able to pull it off. And the players would be, they would be down for that.
And, hey, we saw last time around you're playing for a Stanley Cup, but the regular season had finished and the paychecks. I got to think there's a lot of athletes out there that, hey, if I've got to suck it up and do this to go and make a living versus not getting any money, they'd be more than willing.
Yeah, I think so too, Simmer. And we have these frank conversations with the players that, hey, boys, look around at what's happening in the world. You're a pro athlete. You've worked really hard to get where you are. You've battled and fought to become an elite player, but in the grand scheme of things, like, there's lots of people in the world who are suffering. There's lots of people who are working either from home or, working remotely or having to be away from their family to get their jobs done. So at the end of the day, like, you look at it in the broader context and realize that, you're fortunate to be where you are, and, like, figure out a way to do it. That's our philosophy with the guys.
Talking to player agent Jeff Jackson. As the first paycheck for the next season, has that happened? What's the status of all of that?
I am unclear on whether the guys have received it or not. I think that the agreement was that they were going to get their first paycheck. I haven't heard from any players that they didn't, so I'm assuming that it's happened. But, you know, I think that there was a CBA extension. There's obviously, when that was completed back in the summer, you know, people were looking forward and with no certainty and with, you know, an unknown what's going to happen with the pandemic. I know there's lots of ongoing conversations between the union and the league and whether there's some tinkering around with what they agreed upon. I don't know, but as far as I know, the guys, they received that first pay.
Right. You know, as you said, the results or the impact of this pandemic could be felt in the league for 2-3 more years beyond that. We have no way of knowing. But certainly one of the short-term results has been a lot shorter deals that you've negotiated on behalf of your clients. When we get out the other side, Jeff, as you said, would you like to see things revert back to the way they were in terms of, you know, you have Connor McDavid, for instance, and he signed a max contract and got tons of money from Edmonton. You know, before this all hit, we had seen other guys kind of go now shorter term. Austin Matthews went 5 years, so he kind of hits that, you know, free agency at 27 or 28 or whatever. Do you think that's all going to change, or do you think max term, max dollars is always going to be what you try to extract on behalf of your client?
Well, those two examples are good ones because as we rep both those players and it all comes down to what the player wanted. Connor wanted to have a long-term deal. Austin felt more comfortable with 5 years. I did a 3-year deal for Alex DeBrincat in Chicago, which was to bridge him to a different point in his career, and in the context of the Chicago team. So I think it all comes down to individual player, you know, the circumstance at the time and the desire for the player to have either long-term security or to do something short, you know, with the goal of, you know, doing a longer-term deal later. So it's not really us trying to extract the most and the longest term. It's more reacting to what our players feel comfortable with.
We see a ton of free agents sitting out there. Now, you can kind of argue or discuss as to the quality, but something as simple, Jack, says, as you pointed out, giving out a paycheck, would there be reasons where ownerships would be sitting around, listen, whatever extra dollar I have to send out the door right now, I don't want to. We don't have any revenue coming in. I don't want you signing anybody else. Let's just take care of what we have now.
Yeah, I think until we know when we're going to get back to play, rather, I think teams are going to probably sit tight. I mean, I look, you know, on a daily basis, look through the league's rosters and cap situation, and there's not a lot of flexibility on either, whether it's roster numbers or cap room. And then the cap room teams usually have internal budgets that, you know, reflect their reality. So I think, right now it's kind of let's wait and see, and if we get a firm date return to play, you know, I think probably what will happen was once that happens that, you know, some of these guys that are still out there will maybe get scooped up. There might be a smattering of guys in the interim, but you're probably right, is that teams, you know, there's no hurry to do this. If we haven't signed them already, let's just wait and see what happens.
One of the things that you have to do in your business is to blue sky things, right? You're looking at stuff for your clients in the immediacy in 2 to 3 years and probably 5 years and beyond. As you look at the hockey business, and again, once we get through the pandemic, do you look at that pot of money that's out there? Is it going to continue to grow at the level that it has been? We've got a new U.S. TV rights deal that's going to be up after next year. And then the whole specter of gambling. The amount of money that might be brought into the league through gambling. How much are you kind of looking at those things as well?
Yeah, all those things are a reality of the business. I think that looking at it, sitting today in the middle of this you know, COVID-19 and pandemic situation, it's hard to see clearly what might happen. But yes, there's a new TV deal on the horizon in the U.S. There's streaming rights deals. There's potential for with gambling to be, you know, become a revenue generator for the league and players by extension. So all those things are you know, are positives, but it is really hard to kind of think about it right now. because, you know, it's tough. It's tough for everybody out there. And it's a silver lining kind of sitting out there thinking, okay, well, things are going to get better generally for everybody, not just hockey, the hockey business. But, man, oh, man, I don't know. We just don't know how long this is going to go on. It's just so unclear.
I know overnight they were reporting, I think Pierre LeBrun touched on, and the new CBA, of course, is going back to the Olympics. There's been no discussion. How much of that is a priority for the Austin Matthews and Connor McDavid of the world to represent their country?
Yeah, I mean, they all want to play in the Olympics and represent their country. You know, Roman Josi for Switzerland and different players like that. I think they all are excited about it. So, you know, hopefully things get sorted out so that, you know, the Olympics actually do happen and the players have the opportunity to go and play on that big stage. And it's such a unique opportunity for them. And, you know, you're going to have the youngest players, the youngest star players in the very prime of their career in the Olympics. It's been pretty exciting.
All right, good stuff. Listen, we really appreciate you coming on. I know throughout the summer that Simmer, through you, was able to bring on pretty much all of the top prospects for the draft, with the Sens having the two high picks. And your two clients, Quentin Byfield and Jamie Drysdale, they were excellent. So I don't know how much of that was Jeff Jackson coaching or how much of that is just none? Okay. Okay. Because they did great, and they're certainly great representatives of themselves, and certainly of you as they make their way into professional hockey. So really appreciated that during the summer, and appreciate your time this morning. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, no problem. Anytime, guys.